Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, if you've ever gone scuba diving or snorkeling in the islands, you know what a magical world a reef is. I mean, it's just as close to being in an extraterrestrial environment as you can get on Earth, right? So even being a native Floridian and growing up in Miami, I never went that many times. You know, I at one point got a scuba diving certificate, but I don't know, whatever. I didn't have time to get into diving on reefs very much, but they are so spectacular. And corals, you know, of all kinds are the kind of the foundation of that. And staghorn and elkhorn corals, I understand, are the main building blocks of reefs. But they, like so many fragile things in nature nowadays, are in decline and threatened by environmental pressures, both man-made and natural. So my guest today is somebody who's trying to do something about that. His name is Ken Niedermeyer. Ken was a tropical fish collector and owner of an aquarium supply company in the Florida Keys, and now he's transitioned into doing something different. In the mid-90s, Ken invented a simple, low-cost way to grow corals in controlled underwater nurseries, he calls them, and it's a good term for it, and then a way to transplant them into actual reefs. So now he's kind of expanded into trying to regrow reefs from the Florida Keys to the Virgin Islands across the Caribbean. It's a big project already, and it's getting bigger, and it has to get much bigger to have much of an impact on the reef systems. So Ken is now the director of something called the Coral Restoration Foundation. Welcome, Ken.
Hey, Court. How you doing?
I'm just fine. Thanks for being on with us. I want to ask you to just start off by describing the current state of coral reefs and coral itself in the U.S. and around the world.
Well, I'm sure everybody's heard the bad news, and it is bad news. There's a lot of stress. Most of the reefs anywhere in the world are under some sort of stress and decline. Certainly in the Caribbean, the decline is more noticeable, probably the most degraded area in the world, at least for coral reefs. There are certainly areas in the Pacific where they seem relatively pristine, but they're under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, and the outlook is not good.
So that is the bad news. How does
That's
a coral?
The bad news.
Yeah, and there's a lot of bad news, right? But about corals. But how does it, you know, kind of give us the tutorial, I guess, a little bit on how does a coral reef form?
Well, I'm not the coral reef formation expert, but corals are little animals that live in a colony. A coral head will all be the same genetic. Every polyp will be identical to the one next to it. They're all clone mates. They grow by asexual reproduction, by division and that type of thing, but they also spawn sexually on the reef. But, you know, a coral will settle. It'll start to grow. It'll get bigger, and then maybe another coral will settle next to it. And, you know, it's a long process. Most of these corals take hundreds of years to become a large coral head. And, it's hard to explain how a coral reef would start, but, basically it can start with one polyp or one colony in the right environment, in the right conditions, growing in like a forest. You know, a few trees start and a few more trees start and then some birds and critters come, and pretty soon, you turn a field into a forest, and, coral reefs are somewhat like that. It's just underwater.
So when we look at a coral reef, I mean, there's lots of big structures and almost caves and walls and that kind of thing. Is that whole thing alive, or is it just the surface skin of it's alive, or how does that work?
It's just the skin, it's just the outside. Inside, if you drill into a coral, the outside, the top couple of millimeters, maybe even a centimeter down, there would be some live tissue down in there. But you get down more than a centimeter, and it's just solid calcium carbonate. It's just stone. So it's just the outer edge of the coral reef that's alive. And even that today, a lot of coral reefs is not live coral on the outside anymore. It's algae, so it's kind of not good.
So if the outer skin is what's growing, I guess the inner skin is what they excrete, and the outer skin is slowly and continually building the size, the bulk, the structure of the reef. And if the outer skin gets sick, then that process stops. I guess that's the...
Exactly. And, corals are like... clams or oysters or sea urchins, they extract calcium carbonate out of the seawater and secrete it onto a skeleton. People are like that too. You eat things and you take calcium out of the food you eat, and you build bones with that, and your bones are continuously replacing cells and things like that. So you have to have an ongoing source of calcium. And the corals, it's the same thing. You don't see it in the seawater, but there's some in there, and they're grabbing it out and forming a skeleton. And, it's that outer skin that is doing the work.
We mentioned at the outset the sad state of of corals around the world. What are the threats, just in general, in a kind of a superficial list format? What things cause coral reefs to get sick and die?
Well, there's a lot of stressors. I mean, obviously, right now everybody's concerned about the, these looming threats of, global climate change. The water's getting warmer, and in the coral reef environment, the water gets too warm and stays warm for a while. Then it can cause the corals to bleach, which is a stress response to hot water, and coral will go from a colorful organism to something that's white. It's not necessarily dead, but it's stressed. So, as you have more warm water days, the corals are more likely to bleach. And it also stresses them, so that leads to secondary infections, bacterial infections. So, the warming seas is a problem. The potential for ocean acidification caused by increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is another thing. And, it's like the corals are basically dissolving, and the ability for them to pull that calcium carbonate out of the water is being compromised. So that's the big global thing that everybody talks about now. But there's a lot of local things that are causing problems, too. There's coastal pollution, and that could be chemicals, agricultural runoff and nutrients, and sewage, the local inputs. Mm-hmm. Then there's overfishing, and overfishing is it's a complex issue, but it plays a huge role in the biodiversity of a reef and the health of a reef. That's something that's been going on for a long time. And, there's physical impacts, anchoring, dredging, boat groundings, trampling by people, destruction. There's all those things are all barraging and impacting the coral reefs.
Recent winters have been extremely cold, and I remember reading that there were cold snaps down in the Keys that were almost of historic proportions that actually damaged and killed reefs because it was too cold.
Sure, and that's the flip side of all this. We're all prepared for coral bleaching and thinking about that, and then we have this freaky winter that just, like the perfect storm of winter weather conditions, and we lost more coral in that winter of 2010 than we have from a lot of other things over the last 10 years, so you just don't know what's going to happen. And in a perfect environment, it would bounce back from that. Even a hurricane can come in and destroy a reef. And if the system is still intact, the fish and the invertebrate populations and things like that, it'll recover. But in today's coastal environment, it's rarely the case. There's just too many other things keeping it from bouncing back.
What about something the size of the Gulf oil spill? I think probably a little bit of oil worked its way around to the Keys finally.
There may have been some. I haven't actually heard that anything that they've detected anything, but that doesn't mean that hasn't happened. I just haven't heard about it. something like that would have been devastating to the Florida Keys, and probably would have hurt the economy more than the reefs, and a lot of the oil would have just floated over the top and ended up in the mangroves and on the beaches and people's canals and would have made a big mess. But not sure how much direct impact it would have had on the Florida Keys corals, but other areas where the corals come out of the water a lot of times at low tide, it'd be bad. So, but then all the junk that they put in the water after the spill probably has more of an impact than the oil.
Yeah. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Ken Niedermeyer, who's the director of the Coral Restoration Foundation, about his project to try to bring back, to restore coral reefs that are disappearing around the Florida coast and throughout the Caribbean and around the world, really. Well, Ken, I mentioned that you had discovered a kind of a simple, cheap way to regrow coral. So what is your coral growing technique? Why don't you just tell us how you found that and what it is?
Well, we started really having no clue what to do, but we had some of these staghorn corals that were growing on a live rock farm that we have. We have one of the first live rock aquaculture farms, and that's a whole other story. But, basically we were producing these colorful rocks for aquariums, and coral larvae settled on the rocks. They started growing. We have all kinds of coral on the rock. There's, 20 different species growing out there, but the staghorn coral got my attention because it grows really fast. And so we started trying different things. Pieces would break off. We tried doing a lot of different things, and it slowly evolved into this directed cut pieces off, put them where you want them. So we started growing them on these little cement discs that we made, and that worked. But we've evolved over the last 10 years almost to really get to where we're coral growing machines out here. And our newest kind of invention is we make it's kind of like a tree. We call it a coral tree nursery. And so the corals are grown on these vertical floating structures in the water. They're floating under the surface. They're off the bottom. You know, we can raise them up and down, and they're kind of like a tree. They have arms that go out from four different sides, and from the arms we hang and dangle corals by either monofilament or wire. Hmm. And they grow like that, and they grow like weeds. Hmm. It's great.
I picture a plastic Christmas tree with ornaments being stuck onto it or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly. We might even make a Christmas card and put some pearls on there and some bells or, you know, something like that.
But good idea.
That's exactly what it is. And you know, you look down a whole row of these things, it almost looks like you're in a Christmas tree nursery where there's Christmas trees growing suspended, you know, off the bottom. And it's real efficient. We very rarely have to clean the corals, have almost no losses from disease or predation. And so it's moved from a very labor-intensive thing, growing them on these discs, you know, labor-intensive to keep them clean, and there was disease issues and breakage, a lot of issues like that, to now we're growing on these tree nurseries, and, you know, we almost don't even have to touch them until we're ready to harvest them. So it's, you know, it's cut the cost per coral down considerably. I mean, it's dropped by 80 or 90%. So it's making it feasible. You know, now, people look at it now, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, we can really do this, can't we? I think, yeah,
great.
We can.
That sounds cool. I'd like to see that. How do you harvest them? And I think you call it outplanting?
Well, outplanting, transplanting,
yeah.
Whatever. In the past, we would when we were growing them on these cement discs, we'd just take the disc off of its pedestal, whatever we were growing it on, and plant, you know, glue the disc down on the reef, usually with some sort of underwater epoxy putty. And, you know, that worked really well. We would tag each coral. So next to each coral on the reef was a tag identifying the genotype and, you know, the reef and all kinds of things like that. So if I took a picture of it, I would know exactly which strain of coral that was and where it came from and what reef it is, you know, just by looking at the picture and the tag. Now with the corals growing on the tree nursery, we just take the wire off the tree branch and we just put them on the reef. And, you kind of like set the whole thing on the reef and say, like wherever it touches, then you clean a little spot out, put a little, we call it a Hershey kiss of epoxy, and you stick the branch in that little Hershey kiss. So it might be attached on four or five places, and you're done. You know, it takes 1 or 2 minutes to attach a coral to the bottom, and you move on.
Are you growing both staghorn and elkhorn corals?
Yeah, and we're working with other corals too, but staghorn and elkhorn are the main ones. And so the elkhorn nursery is right now is different. Here in Florida, we only have permits to grow the elkhorn on what we call a disc nursery. So we're growing the elkhorn sitting on fixed disc to the ground. But down in Colombia, we have a nursery and a program going down there, and we've been growing them on what we call a line nursery, which is kind of like a clothesline. And they grow faster, and they grow really well on the line nurseries. So we're trying to get permits now to bring that technology up here and change the way we do it. But it's a real exciting coral to work with. I'm more excited about the elkhorn than the staghorn. Neat stuff.
It does sound neat. Who do you work with?
Well, we've been working, and we have to work, and it's not in a bad way, but with the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary, they manage all of our activities. They, you know, issue permits. They offer advice, and, you know, we're intimately involved with them at every step of the process because, you know, they're in charge of overseeing the entire system down here. And we also work with the state of Florida, and these are, you know, these are partners in the project, but they're not funders. We did get funding from NOAA Fisheries and this American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. We got one of those grants a couple of years ago, like a stimulus grant, and that was working with the Nature Conservancy and several universities down here. So we've been, you know, working with NOAA and the sanctuary and the Nature Conservancy and some of the universities to pull it all together and take, you know, my idea and ramp it up to a large scale. So we're two-thirds of the way through a very big project working with that group of people, and I think that the results are going to be good enough that everybody's going to say, wow, not only was this a good investment of our taxpayers' dollar, but this really has promise. You know, this is something that can be done and should be done. So that's the goal of, we're all looking at that as a do or die, you know, make it happen or you're not going to be funded again.
Wow. So you, as one individual with an idea, you started off on a very small scale, and now you're working with, I guess, state and even federal agencies and conservation organizations and universities. What, University of Miami and...
Nova Southeastern University, University of Miami, those are the main partners in this grant. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I have to pinch myself. I'm thinking, these guys are all following me. I don't know where I'm going. I mean, I kind of do, but it's all new territory. Every step of the way is something new. And what I'm always surprised, how come nobody else has done this? Why is this? You know, why hasn't everybody done this? And I realize there's all kinds of reasons, but I'm the kind of guy, if I see a need, I'm going to take it and I'm going to do it. So I'm more of a doer than a thinker and a ponderer. I mean, I think and I ponder, but I do. So it's fun. I'm having a great time right now. This is almost like what I've been called to do all my life, so I'm doing it.
It's great to have fun while doing good. You can't beat that. You actually remind me of a guy we had on not too long ago, who lives in Michigan, who owned a nursery and had the idea of starting to clone ancient forests, the old growth forests where there were just maybe a few remnant trees left out of what had been a big primeval forest thousands of years old, and he would find even just stumps. And so they're doing that around the world. It's the same kind of thing. They're cloning ancient trees that in some cases barely even exist anymore and trying to reestablish forests of those on protected areas. And it's a very similar thing. But
that's a lot of what we're doing right now. I mean, one of the goals of our project here in Florida and in Colombia and other places we go is genetic preservation, trying to preserve the genetic diversity that we have. And these old growth forests is a great example. Sometimes we'll go to a patchery for a reef that might have had acres of staghorn coral, and now there's one colony left. Hmm. A variety of things have assaulted it. And, we could have a hurricane, that colony would be gone. So we're taking samples from, we literally have 100 different genotypes of staghorn coral in our nursery right now, and every one has different characteristics. Some are resistant to disease, some are resistant to bleaching, some are resistant to heat, some are resistant to cold. All these different components are all locked in the genetic makeup of each of these corals, and so it's important to preserve that. So we're actively doing that. And some people might, poo-poo the idea of restoring reefs, but the idea of genetic preservation is valid, And if we don't preserve it, we're not going to have anything to do anything with in 10 years. So it's a great analogy.
Well, obviously reefs are kind of the nurseries for so many fish, and, it ends up being that many of the fish we eat as seafood start out one way or another in reefs and are caught on reefs even. And, and they provide a buffer between the ocean storms and the land and serve all kinds of purposes. And obviously there's a lot of economic value to it with diving and fishing and boating, and, a lot of that's obvious. But so a world without reefs would be a much poorer and more vulnerable world, and just one more kind of step down in the spiral toward degrading the planet. So, it's definitely something it's worth trying to keep healthy and preserve. So you're expanding it. What progress are you making? I mean, how many corals have you outplanted so far? Or how many different sites are there, and where are they? Just kind of give us a quick idea of the scope of it.
Well, most of our transplant work so far has been in the Upper Keys off Key Largo. But, we're trying to get permits now to pretty much transplant all up and down South Florida. This grant that we're with the Nature Conservancy and NOAA, will be transplanting corals from West Palm Beach almost down to Dry Tortugas. Wherever they could potentially live in Florida, they're going to be rebuilding those reefs, and then the U.S. Virgin Islands. So there's a big effort there. And, most of the nurseries are still, they're 1 or 2 years old, so they've gone from a starting of 200 little coral fragments, and most of them are probably up around 1,000 or 2,000 corals. Our nursery has now got, we've got probably 16 or 17,000 corals, and we could cut those into 100,000 if we just had the space. And so our nursery has just become enormous beyond, our ability to adequately manage it. And so our goal right now is we got to get these corals out of here and onto the reef. And, we're trying to get permits right now to put literally thousands and thousands of corals on the reefs in the Upper Keys and off Key West. It's gone from this tiny little thing. We've planted maybe, a couple thousand corals so far on the reefs, but we could plant 10,000 tomorrow if we had the permits and the time. So it's ramping up to a scale that is really going to make a difference.
A lot of that involves person power. How many people do you have working with you? You know, I'm sure it fluctuates, but on average or whatever.
Well, we we have our foundation has 3 paid employees, and that's it. We have some part-time people that help, but our whole strategy is to involve volunteers or people willing to citizens in the community or dive clubs, aquarium clubs, schools, universities, and we have programs all the time where they come down and we. You know, we put them to work at the nursery, and we put them to work taking corals out to the reef. And then we try to help them feel like, hey, the corals that you just planted, are that's your legacy. That's part of your story. You know, would you like to come back next year and help maintain those? And why don't you start, developing a program that, these can be your corals. And so, we have to leverage other people, or it can't, 3 people. Even 10 people can't do it, but what about 1,000 or 2,000 people that are motivated and have their own, they're spending their own money and their own time doing it, then we can do it. And that's kind of our goal as an organization, is to develop those volunteer training programs and, make it all happen.
Through the universities you're working with, do you get grad students who do this as part of their research and their education?
Well, we're looking to do that. We haven't, we get some grad students doing little tiny research things, but to do, to really do the restoration on a grand scale, we haven't had that. But we've had interns, from graduates from high school, college and stuff, working as interns, and we're trying to develop that. Yeah, we want to work with, those people. It's manpower and it's brain power, but we're still trying to attract them. Yeah, it's not as easy as it sounds.
Well, anybody at the University of Miami or at Nova Southeastern University who's in marine biology or any related field listening to this, talk to your advisor. You can become a volunteer. And I think, people who are members of the Nature Conservancy and other environmental organizations in South Florida in particular, the website is coralrestoration.org. One word, coral restoration, just spelled like it sounds, .org. And definitely the foundation lives partly on donations and sponsorships, so go to the website and look at that. And if you feel moved to help this project to try to restore reefs, you can get involved, either as diving or writing a check or both, right? So,
and I should clarify too. I mean, at Nova Southeastern and University of Miami and several of these other places, they all have people that are actively working on this too. And some of them are funded by the same stimulus grant that we're working under. So there's it's not just us that are doing that. I think we're unique in that this is what we do, and we're engaging a lot of volunteers. But each of those other organizations are, they're caring for their respective areas, which is the way this thing was set up. So it's a big effort. But yeah, I mean, any one of them, or especially us, somebody wants to write a check or get involved, they would see that their money is being put to use and that their time is well spent. If somebody comes down here to work for us, we're going to work them, and they'll have a great time.
What other kinds of barriers have you run into? I mean, you mentioned that as far as the genetic diversity, sometimes there are isolated living patches of coral that are too far apart to really interbreed or whatever, so you're trying to plug the gaps between them and make it easier for them to breed together. But what other kinds of, like, for example, hurricanes, has that been a problem for you?
Yeah, it has. We learned a lot in 2004 and 2005. We had 8 different hurricanes either hit us or brush us. And so we learned what works underwater and what doesn't work. And you learn the hard way. And every time you have an event like that, whether it's a 100-year cold front or a heat wave or a hurricane, you go out there and you look at it afterwards and you figure out what works and what doesn't work. So we're out. Our nursery's out in the middle of a sand flat, out along the reef line, so it's exposed, and it's not that easy. Right now we're dealing with jellyfish. These moon jellies are just millions of them, and they're running into the corals on the tree nursery and impaling themselves and then killing the coral. And I mean, it's not a catastrophic thing, but it's a problem. We permitting is also a problem. I mean, we've come to the point where this has gone from a research type thing where we get a permit to do research, which is pretty easy to get from the National Marine Sanctuary Program and from the state of Florida, to now it's we're doing restoration on a fairly substantial scale, and they're like, we don't really know how to permit that. You know, they're trying to figure out how they're supposed to respond to it. So right now we've hit a brick wall on permitting, but we'll resolve that. And you have to go through those steps, and we'll get there. And I'm not. Everybody wants to see it happen, so it's not. It's just a bump in the road. And sometimes we get opposition from people. They think that our work is going to give some construction company permission to just go out there and bulldoze a reef. And they say, we'll just bring the Coral Restoration Foundation in, and they'll just build us a new reef over here. That's not what we're trying to do at all. We certainly don't want to support that. We want to try to fix the reefs that have already been destroyed. So, but you get opposition from the strangest places.
Life in the real world.
Yeah, it is.
Ken, we just have a minute or so left, but just briefly, if you can answer briefly, what do you think the long-term outlook for coral reefs is along the U.S. coastline and worldwide? I know you're having some success with your project, but it's a huge natural world out there along the coastlines. What do you think 10 years from now will look like? Do you have any idea?
A lot of it depends on our attitude as a country and as the world. You know, we have to develop an attitude of caring about it and doing something. I think that, you know, the biggest challenge is to develop this attitude, this will to change it and to do something about it, and then the will to pay for it to make it happen. If we do nothing, we're not going to have a coral reef that our grandchildren can go to, that not that they can drive to. They might have to go to the South Pacific somewhere. But if we take some action, at least over the next 10 or 20 years, I think we could have a significant increase in the amount of coral down here and the way the reefs look. You know, I think as a community, if we get together and do it, we can have a big impact. But, you know, there's things that have to take place on land. There's things, a way of, you know, doing business has to evolve. There's things that we can do, and there's things that are easy, you know, low-hanging fruit, so to speak. And then there's big pictures, but everybody has to play a part in it. And it's really hard, but I think there's hope. I wouldn't do this if I didn't think there was hope.
Sure.
And I'm, you know, bullish on the outlook.
It probably can't happen without government involvement, but that's not enough. It can't succeed with only government involvement, and it takes local ownership, right? A sense of ownership on the part of people who live anywhere near the ocean, right? So I guess
right. If people, even if they look at us right now, you're doing that grant, you know, that's your job, you're out there, you're supposed to be doing it. Three or four people or, you know, half a dozen people or a couple of organizations can't make it happen. It has to come to the community. So we're really working hard to develop this sense of community ownership and community involvement and making everybody owners in the outcome and owners in the whole thing. And I really think that if we can leverage thousands of people, you know, here in the Florida Keys to fix our coral reefs, I think we have a good chance. But it'll never happen. Government has to be involved, but it can't be the solution. The government has to be one of the partners, not the only partner.
Well, Ken, I'm afraid we're out of time. We could talk about this some more. It's a fascinating project, and I'm glad you're doing it, and we wish you really good luck with it in the future. Again, the website is coralrestoration.org. Pretty simple, coralrestoration.org, and if you want to go there and learn more about it and you're inspired to send a donation check, that'd be even better. Thanks to you, Ken Niedermeyer, for being on with us in American Variety. It's been great.
Thanks, Cor. It's been great talking, and look forward to hearing your show.
And thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.